Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston. Bread for the
broken. We all go through seasons where it's a midnight hour for us. If I could encourage you to be like anybody, be like Paul and Silas. Sing praises. Pray. Sing praises. Flood your heart and your mind with worship. Pray out loud. Pray often. Here's the thing about these midnight hours. They don't last. The sun will come up. The sun will come up.
How do you respond when things get hard? When it seems like your world is imploding? Do you shut down? Do you get angry? Do you try to hide or ignore what's going on? As you'll see today, Paul and Silas have every reason to lash out and complain. They've been wrongfully beaten and thrown in jail. They don't know what's going to happen next. But Pastor James shares that they don't get mad. Instead, they choose to trust God and sing His praises. Their hearts are settled in His peace and love. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts chapter 16 with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
We need bread for the broken. Give some bread to the broken.
So it goes on. The Lord opened her heart. That's the other key too. It's the Lord who opens the heart. You have this wonderful gospel message. You get to communicate this gospel message to people. You cannot save anyone. I don't care how eloquent you are. I don't care how great argumentatively you are, you know, the debates and all this stuff. None of us are ever going to save anybody in our lives. You're not, okay? So immediately allow the Lord to lift that burden off of you. But you do get to introduce people to Jesus. You do get to share the gospel with people. And you never know. Because we always think it's like, well, I got to go, if I go street witnessing, I got to go to where all the bad people are. Good people are getting saved at church. That's crazy. When I was at Bible college, we had people getting saved at Bible college, students. It was the weirdest thing. You're at Bible college, and you're like, you're not saved? No, I'm not saved. I was barely saved going into the thing, so I kind of understood. I had compassion for the, you know, individuals, but you know what? The Lord can open up anybody's heart at any place, at any time, whether it's a church, Sunday morning service, a prayer meeting, some little conversation you're having with somebody at a grocery store where you can't really hear each other because you're so muffled with the mask on. You're like, what did you say? Can you speak up? It's the Lord who opens the heart. So whoever you're praying for, this is what you're praying for, that the Lord opens their heart. The Lord does it. You be there if you have the opportunity to communicate the gospel, to share the gospel. Or if you're not there, you can't be there, then you're praying, Lord, send somebody to share. Send a Paul, send a Silas, send a Timothy on the right day so that you open up the heart. It's a great thing. It's a tremendous thing. It's a beautiful thing. But the Lord opened her heart to heed the things spoken by Paul. So it's all God. It says, and when she and her whole household were baptized, she begged us, she pressed upon us, saying, if you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come to my house and stay. So she persuaded us. Now, this is a business lady who's all about the business, okay? So she's like, look, this isn't optional. It basically is what she's telling them. She's like, okay, look, I'm getting saved. We're going to go to my house. We're going to share the gospel to all my household, okay? I want them all to hear this. And they're going to see maybe this lady who has come alive. We don't know how she was within her household or anything like that. There's no indication of how she was or all we know is she walks back into that house as a brand new Lydia. And she has all her household there. So does that mean she has kids? Probably. she have servants that are working for her? Probably, okay? They all hear the gospel, and it says that they respond to the gospel as well. And then they're all getting baptized. This is incredible. So she gets, like, this is all in one day. She gets saved, the light comes on, takes these guys to her place. They share the gospel with them, and this is how the Church of Philippi is starting. It's how it's starting. And not only that, but she's like, look, you're staying here. You're going to stay at my house. It's plenty big enough. If you're going to be here in town for a while, you're going to stay at my house, which is beautiful. It's crazy. That's so amazing. You couldn't ask for a better scenario. So as that's starting, so you got Lydia, the first person, the first member of the Church of Philippi. It's Lydia, a Gentile businesswoman who has now given her house over to these guys so that they can stay there and have nothing to worry about so that they can just continue on in the ministry, okay? Now it happened, verse 16, as we went to prayer, so they're continually doing the same. They're going to this prayer meeting that a certain slave girl possessed with the spirit of divination met us, who brought her masters much profit by fortune telling. Oh, interesting. So now the conflict is coming in. Because you got a prayer meeting, that's cool. Now people are getting saved. All right, so you can tell the spiritual warfare, it's already been there. This isn't new, but it's getting amped up. And so here's this slave girl. She is owned by a few guys, right? And they are totally taking advantage of her. They are using her and abusing her. You need to understand that that's what's being talked about here, okay? They are taking full advantage of this slave girl who is possessed by a demon, literally. This is not like some, no, this is literally. In fact, the spirit of divination that it talks about here, it's known as, in this region, the Python. Python, okay? So this specific demon that has taken possession of her is known within that region as the Python God. And he has wrapped himself around her. And they actually would have, part of their worship would be towards this this Python demon. And I should have wrote some of this stuff down. Names are slipping my brain right now. They may come back to me, but this is all like, there was one lady that was associated with this, and people from all around would come to her to hear her prophesy, basically, or fortune tell, or tell us what's going to happen to us and all this good stuff. When this is being written, Luke, who's the author of this, which I forget to mention that, Luke is part of this party too. What the reference there is towards this Python false god, okay? So this slave girl is possessed with this demon, and she is bringing her masters, plural, much profit through this fortune-telling. So clearly the demonic spirit within her has some sort of ability, and some sort of success, because people keep coming back to her and paying her, well, not her, she sees none of the money. She gets zero money, okay? She, in one sense, is somewhat a kind of, she's a type of prostitute is really what she is, okay? Minus the sexual encounters, she's being used, number one, by a demon, but also by these men and by other people for gain, for their gain, okay? She's not going to see any of this money. So what we have is you go from a rich businesswoman who was religious to a poor slave girl who is not without hope, but in a state of hopelessness, being used and abused, chewed up and spit out by the system. She's following these guys around. It says, verse 17, she followed Paul and us. So that's Luke, again, inserting that. She followed us, crying out, saying, these men are the servants of the Most High God, who proclaim to us the way of salvation. And this she did for many days. You're like, okay, so what's the problem? Well, there's a big problem. There's a really big problem. You're like, what she's saying is true. Yeah, there are certain spokespeople that you do not want representing the church. There are certain spokespeople that you don't want representing the gospel. A demon is not somebody you want representing the gospel, because here's what's going to happen. as the crowds, they see Paul, they see Timothy, Silas, and Luke, and they're like, okay, well, we see what those guys are doing. Well, this girl's saying the same thing, so we can keep going to her, right? Because they're on like the same team. They're not. Totally separate. Totally separate. And Paul allows this to go on for a few days, but he's going to get fed up with it. Because in the main thing for this is you want to know, like, no, look, I don't care what they say. It's not about what they say. It's about what they believe, and it's about what they live. And if your lifestyle doesn't line up with what we're centered around, then it's like, then the church doesn't need those representatives. The church doesn't need demons as their spokesman, okay? They don't. Right? So that's what Paul is dealing with within the story. It says, as this goes on for many days, Paul, greatly annoyed or greatly distressed, like he's over it, turned and said to the Spirit, now he's addressing the Spirit, he's got no problem with the little girl, but he has got a big problem with the Spirit. Says to the Spirit, I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And he came out that very hour. And when her master saw that their hope of profit was gone, that's like the saddest verse. They don't care about this girl. They don't care about this girl. Paul does. But when they saw that their hope of profit was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them into the marketplace to the authorities. So why Paul and Silas? Why not Timothy? And why not Luke? Well, Luke's a Gentile. And Timothy, his dad's Greek. So these guys are going to these Gentiles are going to probably recognize him more so as the Jews would recognize Timothy as Jewish. That's why Paul had him circumcised. The Gentiles are going to recognize Timothy because his dad's Gentile as a Gentile. That's why they're not grabbed up. But Paul is Jewish. Silas, Jewish. And they just passed some laws saying, we don't want your religion in our town. We don't want anything that represents Judaism or anything like that. So they are seen, this is discrimination, is what it is, but they see them as the enemy. So they snatch up these guys. Their hope for profit, it's gone. Like, they're not going to make any more money. And this girl was only a means to an end. And so what they're going to do, they're going to get rid of her. She's worthless. We don't know what happens to this little girl. But you can speculate, can be dogmatic. Here's what I think happened. This is what I think, okay? I think there's this crazy, amazing lady named Lydia living in Philippi who got saved. And I think probably, just speculating, with a house big enough for everybody, maybe she brings her into her home. Don't know. I don't know. You can ask Lydia when you get to heaven. And maybe there's this girl that's kind of tagging along with her in heaven. I don't know. But what a beautiful story that would be. Why wouldn't that happen? See, you already got little inclinations of Lydia by her saying, hey, all you guys, you're going to stay at my house. We don't know if Lydia was tagging along with these guys as they're making their way to the prayer meeting. We don't know if maybe Luke and Timothy went to the prayer meeting to say, hey, just so you guys know, Paul and Silas just got arrested, but they set this little girl free. She was demon-possessed, and they set her free. And I would like to think Lydia's like, where's that little girl? Where's that girl? Because I got a house big enough. That's what I'd like to think happens to this little girl. But we don't know. We don't know. But there's nothing to say contrary to that. It says they brought them to the magistrates. So they're dragging them to the officials, and they said, these men, being Jews, there's the problem. These men being Jews, this anti-Semitism is what this is, exceedingly trouble our city, and they teach customs which are not lawful for us, being Romans. See, the law was already passed that you can't show up and you can't spread your religion. You can't do that, right? If you're going to be a Christian, keep it to yourself. That was the law of the land. Now, technically, this was like towards the Jews. If you're going to be a Jew, then keep it to yourself. Don't go around trying to convert people. It's your own business. You can be a Jew, but you just can't, just don't sing in church. There's going to be some how to deal with city officials at the end of this chapter, just so you know, okay? Just saying, we're going to go into some interesting waters here. What really happened was not stated. The truth was not communicated. Because the biggest problem is the fact that they're like, hey, we had this demon-possessed girl. She was making us a lot of money. They ruined her. They ruined her. They broke our slave. So now deal with these guys. No, they had to, you know, kind of create these charges saying, look, they're going around teaching all this stuff, and it goes against the law of the land. It says, the multitude rose up together against them, Paul and Silas, and the magistrates tore off their clothes, that's Paul and Silas's clothes, ripped their clothes off of them, and commanded them to be beaten with rods. No trial, no hearing them out, no nothing. They're like, what? Okay, rip their clothes off and let's just start beating them with rods. And in the Roman Empire, there's no real rules when it comes to beating criminals. There's not. What's the one rule? Well, either beat them till they die or beat them till you get tired. That's the rule. Imagine living back then. That's crazy. At least within, you know, other territories and other you know, parts of the world, that there were some rules that they had in place, like, you know, 40 lashes minus one, so 39, you know, 39. Like, that's it. That's the maximum punishment. Oftentimes within the Roman world, it was like, we'll leave it up to you to decide. They got beaten. Again, no trial, no hearing them out, no nothing. It says, and when they had laid many stripes on them, they threw them into the prison, commanding the jailer to keep them securely. Having received such a charge, he put them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. So here's our third character of this story, the jailer. A hardened military guy. That's who he is. Most of the people living in Philippi are retired military people. Okay? And this guy's in charge of the prison. He probably has zero patience and zero tolerance for any troublemakers. And in fact, he gets word from these guys, and he's like, okay, I'll lock them up. Or not only will I lock them up, I will put them in the innermost dungeon, and I will also put their feet in stocks. So there is no way these guys are going to get out of here, and they are going to know you don't cause trouble in my town. That's who we're dealing with here. So they get beaten up, they get locked up, and here they are in jail. And it's midnight. And you think what they would be doing is, well, what we see so oftentimes with like prison kind of movies and jailhouse movies and things like that, with the can on the bars, you know, nobody knows the trouble I've seen, right? Like singing that song together. That's not what they're doing. It's midnight. And it says Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. And the prisoners were listening to them. Who are these guys? Who in their right minds can get treated unjustly, no trial, and it's going to come out that what these guys did was actually a crime. There was a crime committed, but it was the city versus Paul. So there was a crime committed, but it was the other way around. And they got beaten with these rods. We don't even know how many times. And then they're roughly treated. We know that. They're locked into the inner cell. Their feet are in the stocks. And what do they have the audacity to do? Sing worship songs and pray. These are men that have been transformed by the grace of God. I don't know what your midnight hour looks like at times. We all go through seasons where it's a midnight hour for us. If I could encourage you to be like anybody, be like Paul and Silas. Sing praises. Pray. Sing praises. Flood your heart and your mind with worship. Pray out loud. Pray often. Here's the thing about these midnight hours. They don't last. The sun will come up. The sun will come up. But you might as well sing. You might as well sing worship songs. You might as well praise Him. Why? My circumstances tell me I shouldn't be praising Him. My circumstances tell me that if I should be doing anything, it's complaining because of the injustice that has been done to me. I'm going to call my lawyer, and we're going to file a lawsuit because, man, it's like, no. Let's worship God. Let's worship God. You can deal with the other stuff later because there will be a time for that. Justice. There will be a time for justice. But never neglect singing the worship songs, singing the praises, and praying to God. Back is all busted up. Their legs are all busted up. I don't know if you know how this works when they get beaten with rods, but more times than not, they would have them kind of, you remember The Passion, right? That movie about Jesus dying and how brutal that was, where they had him laying over this post and they ripped the skin off of his flesh off of his back. Like that would literally happen. Some kind of the same thing with these rods. Sometimes, you know, they could beat you while you're standing or they have you over this, whatever it may be, and they're going to town on your back and the backs of your thighs and your calves. And they're not trying to be like, okay, well, let's just get them where it's not going to hurt that much. Come on. They're beating these dudes. They're like animals, man. They're beating these guys like senselessly. And here's Paul and Silas. I can't do it here, but they're on their backs in the prison cell and in the dungeon. They're laying on their backs. They don't have a bed. There's none of that stuff. They're on the cold stone floor with their legs up in these stocks. And all that beating that they just endured, they are laying on those wounds in a very unclean, unsanitized prison cell. And they're singing songs to Jesus. And they're singing songs about Jesus. And they're praying, and it's when they're praying out loud. And the prisoners who saw these guys get drug into this place are hearing them, and they're saying, like, what in the world? Who are these guys? Because nobody comes into prison singing any of these songs. Nobody comes in singing these types of songs. They're singing other songs, but nobody's singing these songs. So they caught on that these guys are different. Verse 26, as the story progresses, suddenly there's a great earthquake so that the foundations of the prison were shaken and immediately all the doors were open and everyone's chains were busted loose. This is an amazing earthquake. When it says it's a great earthquake, you need to understand this is a miraculous earthquake is what it is, because apparently the epicenter is the prison itself. We don't know if anybody else in the town felt this earthquake. It doesn't tell us that, but we know that this prison felt it. And not only that, it shook the foundations. Immediately, all the doors were opened and everybody's chains were broken free.
The hopeless, hopeless, pray for the broken.
That's all we have time for today at Bread for the Broken, but we're so glad that you joined us as Pastor James continues through the book of Acts. This book is a powerful representation of how the church first began. It contains a variety of snapshots into effective ways of sharing the gospel. Some apostles shared in large groups, while others taught in more intimate settings. Some taught the gospel through words, and others shared through signs and wonders. Do you wrestle with sharing who Jesus is? Be encouraged. As long as you're teaching the hope and truth of Jesus, there is no wrong way. If you'd like prayer in this area, we would love to pray for you. Visit breadforthebroken.com, click on the contact tab, and let us know how we can be praying. If you'd like to listen to more teachings like this, you can find them too when you visit breadforthebroken.com. Just click on the teachings tab. You'll also be able to learn more about Calvary Galveston at our website, as well as find directions to our location. Calvary Galveston is a church of ordinary people seeking to live as Jesus did. We meet every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. So if you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to meet you. Our atmosphere is relaxed, so just come as you are. You can find out more and get directions on our website. Again, that's breadforthebroken.com. Thanks for listening to Pastor James's teaching today. Know that we're praying for you, and we hope you'll join us to continue digging into the book of Acts next time on Bread for the Broken.
Let me paint the picture of you.